Chapter 14. Tauros, Tauros. In 1868, while out fox hunting, a Spanish hunter, Modesto Cubillas, lost track of his dog among some rocks. From below ground came the sound of barking. Cubillas found the hole through which the dog had disappeared, widened it, and stumbled upon a long hidden cave. He didn't explore the cavern, but reported its existence to the landowner, the Marquis de Satula, 1831-88, a lawyer who owned several estates in northern Spain. Satula had many interests, among them books, gardening, and archaeology. But investigating the past was not a high priority for the busy landowner. 11 years passed before he visited Cubillas's cave, now known as Altamira, meaning a high viewpoint. Wandering through the cavern, he noticed some black marks on the wall, but thought nothing of them. Soon afterwards, however, he visited Paris, where he saw a display of beautifully engraved antler and bone fragments, ancient Cro-Magnon artifacts from southwestern France. His mind turned to Altamira, and he wondered whether similar finds might lie in the layers of the cave. Back home, he decided to excavate. His 9-year-old daughter, Maria, begged to come along too. As father and daughter looked on, laborers dug into the earthen floor with picks and shovels in a hasty search for engraved tools. But Maria soon tired of the muddy work and wandered off to play deeper in the cave. Suddenly, from a low side chamber, the Marquis heard a cry, "Tauros! Tauros! Bulls! Bulls!" Satula hurried over, and Maria pointed to a polychrome, or multicolored bison, one of numerous animal paintings on the rock. Bison, wild boar, and deer all appeared in a jumble on the roof. The vivid colors of the paintings made the beasts look as if they had been painted only the day before. Maria had made one of the greatest archaeological discoveries of the 19th century. The Altamira painted chamber, with its low ceiling, is like a zoo of large Ice Age beasts. Long extinct bison, painted in black and red, stand there, their hair bristling, sometimes with lowered heads. Others crouch. A wild pig prances across the rock. There are deer with huge antlers. The animals fill the ceiling, and many seem more alive because of the bulges in the rock that emphasize their bodies. Among the beasts are red handprints. Some of these were made by blowing red powder onto the ceiling, while others were carefully painted in place. Satula recognized at once that the Altamira cave paintings were similar to the engraved figures he had seen in Paris. He published a pamphlet on the cave in which he proposed the idea that the wall art could be from the same period as the artifacts he had seen on display in France. To his dismay, French archaeologists immediately rejected the notion. The fresh-looking paintings were, they said, modern and too sophisticated to be the work of prehistoric savages. Some went so far as to call the paintings forgeries, created by a modern artist, perhaps in collaboration with a marquis. Bitter and heartbroken, Satula retired to his estates and died in 1888, still suspected of forgery. It would be many years before his name was cleared. A few paintings and engravings had also been found in caves in southwestern France. The experts also considered them to be modern. This was hardly surprising, since at the time, most people believed that primitive, ancient hunters could never be artists. Soon, more prehistoric paintings came to light. In 1895, the owner of the Lomuth cave near Les Aisies in the Dordogne, Larté and Christie's hunting ground, removed some of the earthen fill. He found himself in a hitherto sealed gallery, with an engraved bison and other figures covering the walls. They were obviously ancient. More painted caves came to light at locations that are now popular tourist attractions. Les Camberelles, which is famous for its engravings, and the Fond de Gomme Cave, close to the Les Aisies, with its woolly mammoth paintings. The case for Ice Age art grew stronger and stronger. In 1898, a small party of archaeologists visited Les Camberelles. They included an eminent French archaeologist named Émile Cartalec, 1845 to 1921, and a young Catholic priest, Henri Broye, 1877 to 1961. The engravings deep underground left a powerful impression on Cartalec. 4 years later, he and Broye visited Altamira. The young priest firmly believed that the paintings there dated back to the Ice Age, but Cartalec had long maintained that they must be modern. Now, however, he changed his mind. The paintings were ancient. Indeed, he found the evidence so strong that he published a famous paper apologizing for his previous beliefs. He declared that Altamira was a prehistoric art gallery. The Marquis de Setula and his daughter were finally proved right. Much of the credit for Émile Cartalec's change of mind must go to Henri Broye, who was to become a giant of rock art research. A native of Normandy in northern France, Broye was the son of a lawyer. He was ordained a Catholic priest in 1900. A man of profound faith, Broye was also an exceptional scientist. The young priest's faith was so strong that the church ignored his Ice Age research, which was against its teachings, and gave him permission to pursue his studies, not as a priest, but as an independent scholar. Soon after he became a priest, Broye met two French prehistorians, Louis Capitan and Edouard Payet, who gave him a thorough grounding in the antler, bone, and stone tools from the French caves. Broye was strong-minded and did not suffer fools gladly. You disagreed with him at your peril. But he was a superb artist at a time when both controlled lighting underground and high-quality photography were near impossible. Copying delicate rock paintings required the artist to make rough sketches and then measure the figures. This obliged him to lie on sacks filled with ferns and straw, using only candles or flickering lamps for illumination. Broye spent days wedged into narrow passages in near total darkness, tracing engravings and faint images onto paper. He once calculated that he had spent more than 700 days underground, copying paintings and engravings. Broye finished his rough sketches in watercolors, checking them against black and white photographs whenever possible. Inevitably, some of his copies were somewhat imaginative, but even today, when color images are available, they represent an invaluable rock art archive. Unfortunately, many of the paintings he recorded have now vanished because of air changes generated by frequent visitors. An astonishing discovery came in 1940 when some schoolboys hunting rabbits near the town of Montagnac lost their dog down a rabbit hole. On hearing him barking underground, they opened up the rabbit hole and scrambled down. The boys found themselves in a large hall covered in magnificent paintings of wild bulls, bison, and other animals. Broye hastened to what is now known as Lascaux Cave. The huge bulls and fierce bison, the colors as vibrant as the day they were painted, astonished him. Thanks to radiocarbon dating, see Chapter 27, we now know that the paintings and engravings had been sealed underground for at least 15,000 years. After copying the Altamira paintings, Broye had devised a theory that there were two different Upper Paleolithic art styles which evolved from the simple to the more complex. He was convinced that the artworks were a form of what he called hunting magic. The images were a connection to the spirits of the animals painted on the walls, created to ensure hunters' success. He also believed that some of the paintings and engravings, especially on portable objects, were of such artistic merit that they were made for pleasure, evidence of the creativity of Cro-Magnon artists. Color and infrared photography, as well as later often spectacular discoveries such as Lascaux, has shown that this theory was too simplistic. Another painted cave, Grotte de Chavet, discovered in 1994, contains magnificent paintings of Ice Age rhinoceroses and other extinct animals, which were painted around 30,000 years ago. The Chavet paintings are even more elaborate than Lascaux, yet they are earlier. No one has yet devised a generally agreed sequence for what is obviously a complex and very old art tradition. nor can the experts agree on what the ark means. Soon after the Lascaux discovery, Broye went out to South Africa, where he stayed until 1952, studying the rock art of the San, indigenous people once known as Bushmen. He had first seen San rock art during a visit to the country for a conference in 1929. Earlier travelers and anthropologists had found San paintings long before Altamira was discovered. As early as 1874, South African anthropologist George Stowe told of meeting some San hunters who were not painters themselves, but who knew people who were. San rock art is quite unlike the works in French caves. In southern Africa, there are scenes of the chase during a hunt, of people collecting honey, of dances and ceremonies, and of camp life, as well as signs and symbols. Broye again considered this art a product of hunting magic, but we now know it had far more complex meanings. Not that Broye was the first scholar to puzzle over San rock art. Ironically, not long before Altamira was discovered, a German linguist, Wilhelm Bleek, 1827-75, learned several San dialects while living in Cape Town. He did so after persuading the authorities to release 28 San convicts working on the breakwaters of Cape Town Harbor to act as his teachers. They lived at Bleek's house while he and his sister-in-law, Lucy Lloyd, compiled not only vocabularies and grammars, but also a valuable body of mythology and folklore. Bleek and Lloyd were well aware of San art, but had only a few copies to show people. In 1873, another researcher, Magistrate J.M. Orpin, traveled through the Maluti Mountains of Lesotho, a short distance from the Drakensberg Range. He recorded oral traditions recited by his San guide that were remarkably similar to Bleek and Lloyd's mythologies. Both placed major emphasis on a large antelope, the eland, favored prey for San hunters. Bleek became convinced that the paintings illustrated San myths. But researchers who came after him either ignored the carefully assembled accounts he'd gathered or regarded the information as being of dubious value. They focused instead on recording the art systematically. Broye himself spent 1947 to 1950 copying art in what is now Namibia and Zimbabwe. Rather than photography, he used a pencil and thick paper, which led to numerous inaccuracies. In Namibia, he copied the famous White Lady of the Brandberg. The 2,000-year-old painting shows a human figure with a partially white-painted face and legs, carrying a bow and arrow and striding along holding a flower. Broye stated that the painting was of a woman. It was an exotic painting, and he claimed it was not of a San, but of a visitor from a Mediterranean land, perhaps Crete, where ancient female figures were common. Broye, who seems to have had little respect for the San, was completely wrong. After he died in 1961, research using color photography showed that the painting is of a man, perhaps a shaman, with white-painted features. Bleek and Lloyd's 19th-century research has helped unlock some of the secrets of both European and African rock art. But fundamental questions remain unanswered. Why did Cro-Magnon artists paint and engrave animals and complex symbols in dark caves? Did the artists experience powerful visions alone and in total darkness, then remember them with their paintings? Why did they work far from daylight, their only illumination coming from animal fat lamps? San art is mostly in open rock shelters, much of it involving elongated human figures, sometimes dancing around dying eland. Without question, their art also had supernatural meaning. Some experts believe that the paintings were a way of communicating with the supernatural whose powers would pass to humans through their handprints on cave walls. We will never know exactly what the art meant, but the research continues.